Welcome, everybody, to an extraordinarily special edition of Podcasting Them Softly. This is Frank, and of course, I'm joined by my co-host and co-founder, Nick. We are speaking with Nigel Bluck, who is the cinematographer of all 8 episodes of the new season of True Detective, and his other notable and huge credits are he was also the DP cinematographer of Julius Avery's Son of a Gun, which came out last year and that starred Ewan McGregor. Fantastic film. And he was also the second unit cinematographer of visual effects on the original Lord of the Rings trilogy, which came out in 2001, 2002, and 2003. I mean, everybody knows how much I absolutely love the season of True Detective, and I can't even wait to get into this with him. I'm so excited. Thank you, Nigel, very, very, very much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Hey, nice to have you. Awesome. Nice to have you on the show, Nigel. Again, big fan of True Detective, so this is really cool. And cinematography is like my closet obsession with movies and television. So this whole series of talking to cameramen has been fantastic. So welcome again.
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. So I'm just going to get into it because I can't even wait. True Detective Season 2. My opinion is I love both seasons. I was obsessed with the first season from the first episode that I saw it. Obsessed with it all the way till it closed. I had no idea what the second season was going to be like. I had incredibly high expectations, and I was super concerned. But from the opening credits of this season, I knew I was going to love it. And from the first episode of the new season, I just knew in my gut that this was more so for me than the first season due to the film noir and the pulpy dialogue, but specifically aesthetically. But before we get too vested into that, I just wanted to ask you how you came about this project.
I was Scott Stevens, who produced True Detective last year and this year. He saw Son of a Gun, and that's really where the conversation started. Once we started talking, it kind of just continued that way, and it went my way, which I was very, very happy to do. I've always been, you know, I love the first season, and I'm very interested. Never done television before, but very interested in this new breed of television and where it's going, and just want to be a part of it. So very lucky and happy to have had the opportunity.
How did you set up the look and the feel for this season? I'm assuming you read the script, and did you have any idea of how you were going to show this?
That was quite a long conversation. It's a conversation that started off really with Nick. Nick, the showrunner, and Scott himself, the producer. And then, you know, Justin was the first director, and very early on we had the beginnings of the conversations of the visual direction of the whole thing. So that was the sort of triangle or square, I suppose, that was the initial part of it. And then, of course, Alex DiGirlando, our production designer, was very, very involved in those early discussions about the general aesthetic. The benchmarks was that we wanted to keep it true to Nick's writing style, I think, more than ever. That, you know, it's got that very strong noir and, as you say, some of it pulpy kind of direction, which I wanted to take a page from, you know, the cinema of the 70s, especially the crime cinema and detective cinema of the 70s, and just go back to look at what made those films tick. And the biggest thing, I mean, I'm just a big fan of that era in most, not only cinema, but music as well. So it's just trying to understand the simplicity that the language that was used was being used then, and how just sort of elegant it could be if you pare it down, and just how much we needed and how much we didn't need, you know. And then that begins that conversation was like, well, this, you know, is television and we need to work quickly, and that's going to work well for us. But also just turning that around and looking at how these films were made, a lot of these films were lower budget films, or some of it television, so it was kind of made under that mandate as well. So it all just sort of seemed like the right direction to go, you know. And then it sort of spurred onto the beginnings of the conversation of, you know, the location as character as much as these characters as character. I mean, I see True Detective as a character as True North piece in every way rather than a story bias piece. And the location or locations were very much as much a part of the thing as the characters were in Flesh and Blood. So we were just trying to find ways to breathe life into these places, you know, California in general, then the different parts of it and how Los Angeles works and the different sort of chunks it breaks up into. I'm a Kiwi. I've lived in New York for a long time, but I'm kind of new to California. I've only been here for 3 years. But what's really struck me about the place is that it's like, it's just made up of these different municipalities and they don't all seem to really talk to each other as a whole that much. And that, I think, is reflected in our show. So we're just trying to find ways of representing these different places as you would different characters amongst our Flesh and Blood characters, basically.
I think it's very interesting to hear. I love it. And I think that one of the things that for me made second season so unique and so interesting was that it was a completely different, it was a tonal switch from the first. The look and feel of it were very different. There was no sense of trying to replicate what had come before it when they decided, you know, at a group level to go with a different story, a different cast, a new case in the second season. So, for me, there were so many wonderful nods to the work of Michael Mann, whether or not that was intentional. The Chinatown and LA Confidential vibe was also felt throughout in sort of some of the staging. But I absolutely loved how you were able to sort of capture daytime and nighttime noir within the realm of the cop, you know, the cop narrative. And I'm just wondering, were there any sort of overt inspirations that you had when approaching shooting this season? And in particular, like the work of Michael Mann, because I just couldn't help but feel some of it felt so, you know, wonderfully inspired by some of those, city beats.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Mann was definitely in the conversation, in the ongoing conversation, especially his earlier work. Especially when it came down to the bigger set pieces and how to handle the shootouts and the style and methods we were using for that. Chinatown was definitely a big influence in terms for me anyway, and was part of the bigger conversation in terms of just stylistically how formal that was and when it chose to break the formality and go into a more desperate place. And how well that works, and of course the backdrop is a similar thing landscape wise, and I like the way that it examined Los Angeles, and I wanted to take a page out of that. Friends of Eddie Coyle was a big inspiration in terms of
definitely right
meat and potatoes kind of treatment of conversations and places and how, you know, people relate to each other and where they choose to be and how they choose to be and, you know, how they occupy a room. Yeah, those were the mainstays, I suppose. I tried not to sort of like reference anything. You know, I just toss it up into a conversation. So it's like, you know, like that. I try not to sort of facsimile things too much because I think that's a dangerous, slippery road to go down.
And I never thought, and it never was never suggesting that it was aping anything in particular. I just felt that it was really well inspired and it was studied by some of these genre touchstones.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, and Nick is an encyclopedic knowledge on cinema and literature from that period and of the genre, of course. So it's a very lively conversation with him when you go down that stuff. And so we can get very specific about examples. But the, you know, the big rules that we tried to sit down some sort of mantras or rules, you know, why is the camera there? Why move the camera? Why not move the camera? How can we be very economical and surgical about the coverage? And we tried to maintain those things throughout. I mean, the interesting part of that for me was then navigating those waters with several different people, meaning several different directors, you know, because everyone's got a different kind of take in it. So But at the same time, it was exciting for me because that's the difference between making a movie and making a television show, is that, you know, my relationship with the showrunner and the producer is sometimes, well, it is, it's got much longer longevity in the project than the directors that come and go, you know? So it's like, in some ways I felt uncomfortable about that and took me a while to get my head around, but that's that's how it works, and it's just a different dynamic. And it was really interesting in that way, working so closely with a writer, which Nick is. So in some ways I had a direct tap to the source. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like working with a writer, director, and a director at the same time.
Yeah, I want to ask you about working with multiple directors in a minute, but I wanted to touch upon what Nick brought up about the show's influences and stuff. We just did a couple podcasts ago with a screenwriter, Gary Young, who he wrote Harry Brown with Michael Caine, and we discussed Chinatown and L.A. Confidential, and then towards the end of the conversation, we discussed True Detective and the cinematic elements that are akin to this new season. And definitely with Chinatown, L.A. Confidential, and two things that I thought, the first was The Long Good Friday,
yep.
Especially with Frank Semyon, Vince Vaughn's character's story arc. I mean, it was this wonderful culmination of that film, even aesthetically and thematically, his entire story arc. But what really grabbed me hard was, I absolutely loved the climactic end to the previous episode, Black Maps and Motel Rooms, with Frank's character, or I should say with Vince Vaughn's character, Frank, where he's burning everything down. And it drew me to a comparison immediately to the end of Thief, Michael Mann's first film with James Caan. But it was this wonderful spin on it, and it was as if I had not seen Thief before and I was watching this for the first time. That makes any sense. I absolutely loved that. Mm. The camera movements, the held shots, particularly the held shot on Vince Vaughn through the flames, was just so striking and visceral. I relished in the visual artwork of this new season. I mean, man, I mean, I'm gonna gush for as long as we have you, but I just, yeah, you know, I can't get over it. I'm going to be bouncing around all over the place, but one thing, I don't know, I got to ask you, I'm just way too excited for this. The breaking of the fourth wall in this season was remarkable. And, specifically the first episode, the bar scene, I think is one of the best things I've ever seen in film or television, the slow motion shots of Vince Vaughn and Colin Farrell's character and how they're avoiding eye contact until they actually do make eye contact and look at one another. How did that come about?
That was very much specific a conversation with Justin and Nick. And Justin is very good and very excited at finding new ways of treating a scene. You know, when two people sit down at a table and just and have a chat, you know, it's not just like, okay, well, how are we going to bang this one out? You know, like so often the conversation goes, it's like he's got a philosophy about it and an approach, and that was very much in the beginnings of it, of that conversation. And it was, you know, I think that's where we pushed the boat out as far as we could, really, the whole playing with the eye lines and are they looking at each other or are they looking at the camera and who is the camera. And that I think worked really well. Then we sort of did a similar thing with Ray and his father later on. It's interesting. It's like something I think we meant to continue more, but I think that we were aware how strong it was and how little we could actually afford to use it for it not to then become a parody of itself. You know what I mean? So.
Right.
That's what the sparingness of it was about. Then we started doing things like breaking the fourth wall, as you say, with the camera rather than the eye lines, in that most of the time we were working on locations. Most of the time we were building sets, not intending to break walls away. Most of the time we're trying to keep the camera in the room with the actors and not defy physical geography. But when you choose that moment to break that line or to cross that eye line or to refocus that eye line, that it has the most powerful effect. So it's about, okay, this is a language we want to use, but how can we use it as sparingly as possible so it can be as effective as possible?
Right, yeah. I mean, I think that's a fine line, because I can't think of many instances in film or television where the character looks directly into the camera and it's as effective as it is in True Detective. I mean, I count the times, the bar scene in the first episode, the scenes between Colin Farrell and Fred Ward in the same bar in the dream sequence, and then in the episode where Colin Farrell's speaking with the doctor in the third episode after he gets shot and the doctor asks him if do you want to live? And Colin Farrell looks directly into the camera as it cuts to the X-ray of his chest that's just completely filled with tar.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only other time I noticed that was in the final moments of the finale last night, where Rachel McAdams and Vince Vaughn's wife and Nails are all leaving leaving that hotel after she met with the reporter, and I think she looks at the camera briefly.
She does, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple of moments in Frank's last walk where we played a little bit with, like, you know, is he looking into the camera or is he looking past the camera, and is he behind him or not? You know, it's just that moment when he's not sure if he's dead or not, or which world he's living in right now.
Yeah, that was a most excellent existential final walk of Frank Semien. I mean, that was beautiful. So, what was it? All right, I'll segue past my gush fest real quick. But what was it like working with multiple directors on this?
It had its high points and low points. I come from a background of not working with Michael, of not doing television. I've done like a bunch, you know, 6-7 movies and a lot of television commercials. So I'm used to working with a lot of directors all the time on the commercial level. On films, I'm used to working with a single voice. And to be honest, I found it quite difficult. Not difficult in that it got in the way, difficult in that there's a certain amount of time to do these things and to have a new person come into the fold and sort of get them up to speed with where we're at and what we're doing without treading on anyone's toes can be quite an undertaking, you know. So usually what happens with television is there's two DPs, and that, you know, so you're revolving constantly and you're spending more time running up with the director. That's not what happened here. My wife, Jack Fitzgerald, who shot second unit and shoots the days that I can't shoot main unit because I'm scouting with another director, so I was on main unit all the time, and then only a few days before I'd meet the director and we'd do a tech scout and then we'd be shooting, you know. So for me, there wasn't enough conversation running up each time, you know. That got a lot better with some of the directors who were there for longer periods of time, like John Crowley, who did, what about 6 and 8 or 5 and 8?
Yeah.
Because it was a longer... He was involved for longer, so he was already up to speed by the time we came around to do 8. So look, I'll be honest, I found it tricky. You know, I like working very closely with a director. I love working with writer directors. I like to be involved in the filmmaking process more than a guy who, you know, exposes it and makes sure all the other DP roles are ticked off. You know, so. If I was to do it again, I would really love to work with a singular director. And I really believe in the format of singular director TV. I think what has to happen, really, to be honest, is that the networks have to basically cough up a little more money so we can have a little bit more pre and do it all. You know, I think a short run season with a single director, single DP, single production designer is the future of television, really, if we're going to keep being able to push the boundaries. If we keep on trying to fit that into the television box of production at the moment, I think there's going to be a glass ceiling. You know, I think it can only get so good, because you're not going back to the core every time. You're not getting the truth from one person every time. You know, it's you're getting several too many people in the kitchen, too many cooks in the kitchen. So I'm not against it. I understand how it has to be there to make this television this quickly and get it on air and get it, which is a great thing. But I think for the future of it, the direction is to find a way to make the single director format work for television. Then the sky's the limit, really. Then you're just talking about cinema screening on a different format.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that television has kind of reached this pinnacle as to where at times and with select series, it's far superior to film. And I think that some stories, like obviously True Detective, need to be told over, 8.5 hours as opposed to a 2.5 to 2 hour film, if we're lucky. And I know what you're saying with the single director. I know that's what part of what was so appealing and alluring to so many people with the first season of this show. I know the second season didn't follow that format for whatever reason. But I know Nick is a huge fan of the Nick that's on Cinemax. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet because I don't have Cinemax, but I have it pre-ordered. But yeah, I think you nailed it with single director, single DP, limited series runs. I think that is certainly where television is headed.
Yeah. I mean,
any good television.
Yeah. I mean, even single director, dual DP, or whatever it takes, basically, to get it going. You know, but I'm super excited to hear these directors' voices more than once every 5 years that I love their films, you know, and I just wish that this was something that could be a going concern, you know, and it's doable. It's really hard, and it's just different than it has been, but it's doable.
And even with multiple voices from a directorial standpoint for season two, unlike season one, you had the opportunity to work with these various directors. One of the things I thought was so consistently awesome throughout the whole series, and having lived in Los Angeles for close to 10 years, in my 20s, I now live in, not in California, so I've had some little bit of perspective leaving. The city is that ultimate city of interconnectedness while still feeling disconnected, and I thought that the visual motifs of the various highways and connectors were really, really well thought out. And it wasn't just something that looked cool and looked slick from the helicopter, looking out at the city of Los Angeles, which is so photogenic. But it really brought you into sort of the state of these people who are all, lost, adrift, looking for redemption in a way. And I couldn't help but feel that the overhead shots sort of conveyed all that. Were the overhead shots for the entire season something that Nick had written out in script form, or was that something that, you guys talked about before, or, not written on the page?
It was a bit of both. I mean, he certainly wrote some of it into the script for sure. There was definitely, aerial shot of highways and describing what they are as pieces of concrete and what they mean. And so that was very much there, certainly. And I loved the idea of it. And, Justin loved the idea of it at the beginning of when he was part of the conversation. And the challenge of it for me was how to do it, as you say, in a way that hasn't been done a million times. And I sort of saw them like chapter breaks almost. I was very inspired by Lars von Trier's Breaking the Waves and the chapter headings that he used in that film. Those images are just burned into my brain. And I love the way that they related to the environments that they were, but they had this amazing poetic kind of treatment, and that how it just gave us a moment to step back from the story and sort of just absorb what's just happened, and kind of almost a theatrical act structure. And so those are the things I loved about it. And then I started looking at this photographer, David Maisel, who's a fantastic American photographer who did some amazing aerial work in the 60s, I think, in the 70s, a lot of it photographing LA from a very high height on infrared film and just really breaking it down into the beauty and the ugliness of what it is and how much it sums up the city and this place. So those are the big, in fact, they actually licensed a bunch of David Mason's photographs, and what you see in the opening credits are a lot of his photographs, that some of them have been animated. So that's very much a touchstone of what I was trying to recreate in the air, you know. And we actually, you know, we didn't spend a lot of time shooting that. We did maybe, I think, three to four days all up aerial, and I went up with a pilot, and we talked about exactly what we wanted to see. And my main concern was being, you know, was having different times of day and different lighting and atmospheric conditions. So it really felt like those images were part of the whole story and weren't just something gathered together and thrown out throughout, you know?
This is sort of a technical question, and it might be, you know, too tech geek for some, but I'm curious. So you go up in a helicopter and you get the shots that you want for the entire season over the course of a few days or a few hours with one, you know, was it like one day of doing all of these shots, or were they interspersed throughout the shoot?
Interspersed. I mean, you know, we did some aerial stuff for other purposes, like following cars or whatever, you know, so sometimes we'd have an opportunity to do a couple of things there. We did a little bit of stuff one day with a drone up in the Redwoods because we couldn't get a chopper in there. So you see a little bit of that interspersed. But the main stuff, well, the stuff that's really throughout most of it is stuff we shot in 2 days after the wrap, after final wrap. And at that point, I really knew what we needed, and I knew what the story was, and I knew what the landscapes were, and I knew California better and Los Angeles better, and I knew where to go and get them, you know. It wasn't as precise as I have to go to this place at this time and shoot this. It was more just like, get up there, and I know what I want to get, and in accordance with the aerial operator, we just got it. I mean, you know, and I was trying to keep it very simple. I mean, the big mantras was trying to avoid seeing the horizon so that you get the sense that the landscape fills the frame and you get this disorientation from that, and then just studying the highways and varying to connectivity of this place and how it sort of holds it all together. Again, in the same language as the rest of the coverage of the film, was to keep it as simple as we could, really, you know, and keep it in the same language. So it wasn't just like, didn't feel like a commercial break or something. It had to be integral to what we were doing.
Right. Yeah. I kind of looked at the aerial shots in a way, especially of the interstate system with like the four on ramps going onto the main highway, as these four people's lives are going to cross and they're all going to intersect. And it was almost like a feeling of impending doom.
Yeah.
In a way, for me, one thing I wanted to ask you was, while watching the season, I should say, when the teaser came out, I was super excited and I was watching it. I don't know how many times I watched a teaser. It was like an obscene amount. And I'm trying to analyze frame by frame. And even as the show progressed, I know that the show is set in present day, but the way a lot of it's shot, and particularly the way a lot of it's shot, and I mean different costumes, different characters wear, but it almost seemed to me like there was some sort of ambiguous time frame to where we would be drawn into a different world with each different story arc.
Yeah, that was very much, you know, the idea was to keep it as sort of neutral as possible in terms of a time frame, so that if you did start thinking about it, you sort of got lost in it. You know, like the bar, the Black Rose is kind of lost space and time, you know. Vinci is very much a sort of part of Los Angeles that's kind of lost in time. It's, you know, you go down there and drive around, it's like you could be in 1973. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it tells a story is the cars and the model of the cars. So there was, yeah, we definitely, you know, and stylistically I was using old lenses and trying to make an image that looked like something from the 70s. I was certainly not trying to make something that looked, you know, spanky and contemporary and sharp. You know, I was trying to make sketches of things, you know, and bring them to the foreground what we want, you know, find locations that have neutral backgrounds so that when we put our people in front of them, they come forward, you know, and that was sort of the mantra throughout, and the costume design, as you can see, and Alex's design. We weren't trying to be retro. We were just trying to not make a point of any time frame in particular. You know.
Yeah, right. Nothing feels like a gimmick or nothing feels that way. It's like this seamless. It's a seamless transition from character to character, depending on how it's shot or regardless of the new Dodge Charger that, Colin Farrell's character is driving or the sunglasses Vince Vaughn's wearing. You know, I couldn't help but take from that it was, as you said, it was supposed to be kind of like this timeless time capsule piece.
Yeah.
Where it could be viewed at any time and still hold its weight. Because,
Yeah, I mean, we're telling you the lies. I mean, it's set now, but we were just, as an outside eye coming to America, I mean, I find this place incredibly old-fashioned, really, to the immediate eye. You know what I mean? Visually, it's like you still have fax machines here, and you know what I mean? I like that. I like there's a sort of charm about it that's kind of like. I mean, it's not true of the whole place, but I mean, I definitely feel that from Los Angeles. You know, it's got an old schoolness about it, which I like, you know, and a simplicity to it, which comes with that. It's not trying to be the newest shiny thing all the time.
Yeah, there's nothing unnecessary. Like, the show was so stylish and it was so smart about its style. There was nothing about the season that felt unnecessary or just put in there just for the sake of aesthetic embellishment. And that's one of the marks, in my opinion, of like a really sharp cinematographer in conjunction with, you know, sharp people who are, you know, coordinating the show, and they're not getting lost in the chance just to flex your muscles for no reason. I wanted to ask, and we'll certainly come back. I know we will. Frank wouldn't have it any other way, but I would be curious to know how you got your start. What led you to cinematography?
I actually wanted to be a director, and I went to art school in New Zealand, fine art school, to do so, and discovered by shooting everyone else's films basically that I was more interested in being a cinematographer, and then went on to just, you know, be an assistant in the industry for a while to learn the ways. And then I got into the National Film School in Australia, and which has a very cinematography specific stream, and did that, and then basically just left and, you know, bought a camera and started shooting, built a little company and just shot everything that moved, and had a great run at a good early commercial career, and shot a lot of commercials, and just shot my first film when I was about 25, and have done so every year or a couple of years ever since. That's where I come from. I mean, I come from a love of film more than photography. That being said, I have a great love for photography as well, but my first instinct was story and storytelling. And then storytelling with images is what grew out of that, really, was the refinement of it, I suppose. You know, I like the refinement process. I'll be very honest about that. I like being part of something and paring it down, distilling it to where it can be absolutely perfect rather than the big broad strokes. I mean, I enjoy those as well, but my favorite part of the process is that working with a group of people to bring something down to its bare essence, to the right place, and the challenges of that. And that's what cinematography is to me, and cinema, you know, and I'm very lucky to do that for a living.
Yeah. You moved on to, or I shouldn't say you moved on, but you shot as a second DP for Lord of the Rings.
I was a visual effects DP for Lord of the Rings. I wasn't the second unit. There were many, many, many units, and I was the visual effects.
Okay.
DP. So I mean that was Andrew Lesney, bless his soul, who gave me my big first break. You know, an amazing cinematographer, an amazing guy. I was shooting a tiny film in Wellington at the time of the main unit photography, and he was looking for a visual effects DP, but he didn't want a visual effects guy. so he found that in me, and I just sort of had met him. My wife now was an assistant on Lord of the Rings then, assisting him, so we sort of met that way, and that was a big break, and I got an agent in the States through that. Not that I did anything in the States until now. But that's how I got my way, really.
So a visual effects cinematographer, or what did you call it?
Yeah, visual effects cinematographer. I mean, basically, it's like, you know, there are several, many, many units on Lord of the Rings, and one of the units was a visual effects blue screen unit, which we had stages with green screens and blue screens, and yep. So many of the shots in Lord of the Rings are like, have 10 parts to them, and I'd shoot one part, and someone else shoot another part, and, you know, go on and on. So, but it was, you know, it was exciting to be a part of that at the beginning of that.
What
time.
A massive, yeah, like what a massive thing to be exposed to, and Andrew Lesney, obviously, just an incredible cinematographer. I mean, my God, I mean, it's like, you know, just phenomenal that he would have been the guy to get your, you know, to get you your start.
Yeah, he's a very, I miss him. He's a very generous and talented guy, incredibly smart, just had the perspective, was just like three steps ahead of most people on set all the time, you know, and watching him and Peter Jackson work together in that beginnings of that time was
just like,
was an amazing,
you know, when they were firing on all cylinders with those films, and that was just such a, just a gargantuan thing to start off on. I mean, it's like the, you know, it must have been sort of, you must have kind of felt like, oh, it's all downhill from here once you, you know, you started shooting on the Lord of the Rings. But that's fantastic. I know that you've shot some short films, which sometimes aren't easy, you know, as they should be to find. But Son of a Gun is the movie that, you know, you said got you some attention here in the States, and which led to True Detective. And I, you know, having had a chance to see that film a couple of times, it's something where, too, it's played into the strength of True Detective. That movie is so stylish, but in such a low-key way as to not interfere. I feel like it's sort of like, you know, you sort of bring this eye to everything where the style is there, the aesthetic possibilities are there, but you're not interested in getting in the way. And that's one of the things I thought was so nice about Son of a Gun is like this really solid genre entry, and, you know, your style kicks it up a notch.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's very much where I come from. You know, I try and do my thing and not get in the way and leave a sort of silent footstep, as it were. You know, just like be there and point the gaze in the right place, but leave room for personal decision within that, and allow the audience to explore it and discover things on their own. You know, I hate watching movies when people are pointing at things to look at, and I'm being told what to do and what to feel and when. I mean, I completely shut off. You know, if a filmmaker can lay down a premise and open up a storybook and allow you to walk into it and make your own decisions and find your own way through it, yet watching over them the whole time very carefully, that's what cinema is about for me, and that's what I strive to do with a director. You know, I mean, that's part of what excites me being a cinematographer or a director, is you're often trying to find a way to emote that voice, to emote those words of the director, and do it in the right way, you know, in collaboration with them all the time, of course. But, you know, that is really the nuts and bolts of what we do.
When you get a screenplay for somebody who's interested in having you shoot it, do you read the screenplay first as if you would just regularly read something? Or while you're reading it, do you start constructing a visual narrative for it as well?
I always try and read it straight through without stopping, without taking notes, without thinking about it too much. You know, just try and read it as if I was to watch the film for the first time. And then I'll sit back and, you know, I can't help but ideas and thoughts and images and comparisons come to my head. But I try and see the thing alive in its entirety once and try and get a little bit of perspective from that first. And then go in and start to attach things to it, you know. But the biggest thing I try and work by always, as in any artistic pursuit, I think, is it's about objectivity. You know, the more you can remove yourself from your work, the wiser things you'll have to say about it. And that's hard in filmmaking because there's so many people in there and there's so much pressure to get it done now or yesterday or whatever. But, you know, the more ways you can build, even if it's just seconds in the way I work on set, is to be able to step back and make a proper decision, make a decision about something objectively, then you're making the best informed decision.
Right. Do you think that do you know what your next project's going to be? Do you have anything lined up or that you can talk about?
Nothing I should talk about. I'm not far enough down the line with anything in particular yet, but there's bigger stuff and smaller stuff and
right.
It's good. There's been a lot of, opportunities and doors, I suppose, being opened up with True Detective. I just don't want to jump into anything. I want to take my time and choose the right thing, you know. I'm curious about everything. I know what I love and I know what I like, but I'm very interested in working in the States and the bigger platforms and what can be done. I mean, shit, I saw Mission Impossible yesterday and I got so excited about that, and I haven't been. And you know, it's strange. I mean, I'm not an action movie guy, really, in terms of the films I go and watch. You know, I like, but it was really great going to see that film and to see that cinema running at that high an octane level.
And it was insane. So well,
I was so impressed by it. You know, and it's like usually I go to those films and I'll nap a couple of times, but there was none of that, and you know, cinematography was just beyond, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I'm one of his big fans. That game, I was like, you know, whereas back in the day when I was a cheeky punk, I'd be like, oh, no, you know, the irony of going to Hollywood and making films is like, forget about it. But, you know, I am very interested in that. I'm very interested in that platform and the talent of people here. And as with my intention with True Detective, it's all about audience. You know, the biggest audience that you can address is the most important audience, you know, and if there's change to be made and thoughts to be changed, and this is the platform to be doing it on, as well as the independent scene as well, which I'm completely, you know, enamored by and love, and I want to make independent films the rest of my life, but I would love to be able to span both worlds, you know, that would be my life's ambition.
Is there a genre that you really, really would love to play in, like a Western or a sci-fi film or something?
Yeah, Western, you know, I mean, I was so excited about Westworld, and I was so tempted about the potential of doing that. But again, that's a multi-director thing. So I'm super excited to see what they've done with that. I love science fiction. I love where science fiction meets existentialism. That is my favorite cinematic area. You know, I love noir. I like action. I like very sedate stories about people in rooms. You know, I'm a huge fan of Iranian cinema, and you know, movies about sticks floating down rivers. You know, I love it all as long as it's good, you know, and I just want to be known as someone who's working on quality throughout many genres rather than someone who's just very good at that one thing, you know.
What are some of your favorite shots from this season of True Detective that you shot?
My favorite location would be the Black Rose.
Yeah.
And the favorite location because of the opportunities it offered up photographically. And that was great. I mean, that was a lot of influence from that was from the diner and Eddie Coyle and the fluorescence they had in there. So it was like, I had a very specific idea of what that would be lighting wise. And I think we achieved that. And I'm very proud of that. The aerial stuff, I think there's some great stuff there. And I think as a brand for the show and a strong image that worked well. You know, like the connecting shot that pulls out at the end of Ep 1 from Point Magoo and reveals the landscape. That we actually wrote more of that stuff in, the sort of connecting tissue between the land and these aerial shots. There was more of that there. It sort of got taken out for whatever reason. The sort of aerial omniscient point of view. That's what I didn't mention about the aerials, actually. That a big part of that was also, well, this omniscience, the sense of something larger at work watching over these groups of people. You know, that was the point of view of what the aerials were. And you know, that was important. Other stuff I loved. I mean, look, you know, I'm most excited when I'm with the actor a foot and a half away from them, going through that scene with them with a camera on my shoulder. You know, I mean, that's the most, that's where you relate emotionally to what's going on more than anything else, I think. So I'd name many of those great scenes, you know, where those were the moments. You know, we had a very clear, but a very specific lens, there was always a very careful conversation about when we were going to be with the character, when we were going to be watching them. And those moments when we choose to be with them or inside their heads almost, when you're right there close to the camera on my shoulder, you know, those are the most exciting portraits for me in the film, photographically. So, yeah, I suppose that's about it. I mean, look, there's all sorts of stuff I loved. But I like it as a whole, you know. It was like all said and done, it was television. It was 6 pages a day, and we were banging it out in 12 or 13 days in it, you know. And it's just like there's not a lot of time for refinement, you know. You have to have a pretty clear idea of what you're doing when you go in, and you're jumping from one thing to the next, and there's not a lot of time to sit around and scratch your chin. So, you know, I don't think it'll be, you know, when it's singular images, there's some great stuff in there, but it was more for me about trying to create groups of images that work together every time, you know, and not singular pieces.
Certainly. Which character was your favorite character to shoot?
Colin. Ray.
Yeah. I know, man. Ray, that character.
We're both huge Colin Farrell fans, and I was totally obsessed with this character in Miami Vice, and I felt like there were so many instances in True Detective where that dude walked into the set of True Detective and just like you got a chance to see more of that character. I know it's not the same character, but I couldn't help but make the visual correlations and everything else. I'm just a huge fan of him, so I'm not surprised to hear you say you know, he was your favorite character to shoot.
I mean, he's just a pro. He knows, he understands camera language as well as the cinematography does. He knows what the camera's doing, where it's, he knows what the camera's doing when it's not on him. He knows how to work that and not work that, and how to, you know, give to the rest of the actors on set. And it's working with actors like that is what makes it all worthwhile. I mean, it's the high end of it, you know, and something that, unless you really understand the process of filmmaking, you just can't appreciate, you know, because it's just the innateness of what they do is amazing. He's an incredible actor, you know. And look, not to take anything away from anyone else. I mean, Rachel was amazing. Vince was great. You know, Tyler was fantastic. They're all great people, and they all really gave it up.
They were all really, really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's 4 career high performances from each one of them. I was completely blown away in the first episode by how great each one of them were. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. They all, I mean, it's a real sense that they were all like, they all understood that, and they all were playing up to the level, but they were doing it together. There was never any sense of like trying to scene steal or out act or out or manipulate, you know. When it came between those 4 people, they had a massive respect for each other, and it was great to be a part of
it. One thing I wanted to ask real quick too, is the shootout, because that shootout was, I think it was at the end of episode 4, if I believe, right? The big shootout. That was one of the most intense shootouts that I've seen in movies, television, what have you. And I'm just sort of wondering, was there any sort of, did you draw any sort of inspirations from anything else when devising that shootout? And, you know, how was it fun, you know, quote unquote, to shoot such a huge action scene? I know that you'd had a chance to do some really nice action in Son of a Gun, but this seemed to be like just on a whole other level.
Yeah. I'd say the biggest influence was Michael Mann for that stuff, you know, and, you know, Heat in particular, that sense of that marathon gun battle, the sense of chaos that happens in the middle of these things, which is, and especially the setup of that, which is they weren't expecting to walk into what they were walking into at all. And it just sort of completely unfurled itself in front of them. and then the added chaos of the bystanders, you know, and it's
an element of danger. Yeah, like you said, the bystanders, it was so intense and immediate and scary. I mean, you know, like. Hollywood shies away from showing bystanders going down. Not all the time do you see that. I can honestly count probably on both hands, you know. They don't do it often. So when you see that happen, it's bracing. You're like, oh, shit, you know, this is for real. Like, people are going to get fucked up here. And that's sort of how, you know, that last sequence went. I mean, it was lethal. People that you liked went down. And you know, I know that in the realm of television, most of the time the main characters don't die until the end, or if there's a big twist or something. So, you know, you sort of know or hope or assume that these people are going to come out of the situation intact. Given that it was an eight episode season, I never felt like anybody was safe during that scene. And, I think that's a testament to how you guys shot it and pulled it off.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a lot. We had 3 days to do it, I think. So it had its difficulties. But I think it's just about keeping the camera in there with the actors. You know, I was talking before about where is the camera? Is it with them or is it watching them? And is it objective or subjective? And that's if you can get the camera in there in a gunfight and get the cameras close to the guns and get the collaboration with the armorers to be able to do that, which is often quite difficult. But that's when you can get a point of view into something that you've seen plenty of gun battles from the mm-hmm. corner block, right? You've seen plenty of gun battles from across the street, right? You don't see that many when you're right there with them all the time.
Right.
I mean, you see it more now because it's definitely coming up. More and more of a part of the language, and when we've got ways of doing it safely now that we didn't have before. But that's it. And it takes grit and commitment and getting in there, and you know, it's loud and dirty and dangerous, you know. But you just got to be careful and do it well with the right people, and the actors are a big part of that. They've got to really know what they're doing and be very aware of what they're doing with their guns, and they're blanks, but they can be lethal. So, you know, and they have been. So it's just about getting the cooperation of everyone and then creating a very controlled atmosphere that's representing something that's absolute chaos is basically what it's about.
Well said. Well, thank you so very, 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 very much for coming on our show. I appreciate you withstanding my gush fest and the questions, the intellectual questions from Nick as well. We would love to have you. We would love to have you on again at any point to talk about a new project you're working on, or if you just want to come back on and talk about a film you love or anything like that. You have absolutely an open invitation for coming back on if you so choose to.
Great. We should do a 2-lane blacktop.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
My favorite film inspiration of all time.
I'm freaking out even more now about how awesome you are.
And like, that's one of those movies, Nigel, where like I've seen it a couple times. It was when I was in college, it was like 15 years ago. And every week on Facebook, somebody references 2-lane blacktop. And I'm always like, you know, I should go back and get that. Like, I should rewatch that. So now you've given me a reason to do so. So I will. We'll hopefully take you up on that.
I have a 16 anamorphic print of it. We should have a screening of it one day.
Oh my God.
You can fly us out to LA, sure.
I mean, I'll fly myself out to LA for that, but yeah, man.
Tarantino's here, I'm sure he'd welcome us.
Awesome.
That's awesome. And I will say real quick before we hang up that I'm in the hunt now online to find a UK quad poster for Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia after seeing last night's episode. And I'm going to find it and I'm going to get it. So, yeah, man, I just wanted to say again that True Detective this season looked absolutely beautiful. Great.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to everyone for watching it in droves and appreciating it. So, you know. It's been a great ride, and I hope there's more.
Oh, I can't imagine there's not going to be, honestly.
I can't imagine there's not going to
be. I honestly couldn't answer that question either. So who knows, but.
All right. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Good luck with you.